Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
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 Yep, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast hosted by three men, all of whom are secretly scheming to depose the others and seize power.
I'm the only real Emperor.
Or is it Emperox? It depends.
No, that's Clorox. I'm the Emperor.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Well, we are this week reading The Collapsing Empire by John Scalzi, which means that this recording will probably fail.
Yay.
We have previously attempted to record reviews of John Scalzi books to...
Which shall not be named.
Which shall not be named because our recorder mysteriously failed twice. It's very disturbing.
Different recorders, right?
Yes. No, I don't know.
Things happened. We can't explain them.
Paracelsus says you can't step into the same river twice. That's I don't know what that has to do with anything.
It's the flow, man.
I also don't think that was Paracelsus. But moving on. The Collapsing Empire by John Scalzi, chosen by me because it's a Hugo nominee, and that rhymed. So, from the back of the book, yes, we're really going to maximum annoyance today.
Also, it was read by Will Wheaton, right?
Oh, yes. Will Wheaton, the inventor of wheat. So,
wheat beer.
Okay, I'm in for that. So from the back of the book, our universe is ruled by physics, and faster than light travel is not possible until the discovery of the flow, an extra-dimensional field we can access at certain points in space-time that transports us to other worlds around other stars. Humanity flows away from Earth into space, and in time forgets our homeworld and creates a new empire. The interdependency, whose ethos requires that no one human outpost can survive without the others. It's a hedge against interstellar war and a system of control for the rulers of the empire. The flow is eternal, but it is not static. Just as a river changes course, the flow changes as well, cutting off worlds from the rest of humanity. When it's discovered that the flow is moving, possibly cutting off all human worlds from faster-than-light travel forever, three individuals, a scientist, a starship captain, and the Empress of the Interdependency, are in a race against time to discover what, if anything, can be salvaged from an interstellar empire on the brink of collapse.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, that didn't ruin the book.
Yeah, well...
I always wonder who writes those. Does the author write those, or is it...
Generally not.
Some marketing guy?
At least in the past, it was usually an intern in the publishing departments.
They're like, read it or not, write something about it that sounds cool.
I mean...
This is the first time I've read the back of the book, and I think this book actually would have been even less enjoyable if I had read the back of the book prior to reading it.
Don't give away your tremendous enjoyment for this one.
I think I like the version better where it starts with, our universe is ruled by psychics, which is what I misread at first.
Our universe is ruled by... That's Dune.
Okay.
This is Dune Light.
Maybe Dune. Maybe Warhammer. I don't know. But
they both have psychics.
Yes. Okay.
Except one calls them psychers.
Great. I don't know. Barry, let's start with you. What did you think of this glorious book?
You know, I have to say, I think I expected a little more from a Scalzi book. In that regard, I think I was a little disappointed, but it's a light summer read. It goes quickly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of swearing. Don't listen with your children in the car.
Good point.
Children walking by with the windows open or even with the windows up.
Okay.
Well, there are a dozen more books in the series or so. So
are there really?
Well, maybe 10. Well... You can go into the
That's for the spoiler section, the discussion section, since that's not really a spoiler, but yeah.
I liked it. You know, it took me a little bit to get into it, and I think it was a little light. As you know, it wasn't like Dune or whatever, which, you know, he actually did say, you know, he basically wrote it as if it was Dune to start with, and then he's like, whoa, this doesn't work at all. He's like, I'm not Herbert, so don't try, and then it came out fine after that.
The flow must spice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there is a lot of Dune to it. It's a lot like, say, The Foundation, or, I mean, it's the whole Galactic Empire genre, which I think was more of like a 60s or 70s. I forget. It seems like that was quite the genre in science fiction for a while, of having these huge galactic empires and describing their heights and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it.
I mean, it. Yeah, okay. Anything before I jump in? Anything?
Anything
useful?
I would have to say no. But no, I did like it. It was a little bit slow for me to get into it, but not like the end of the book slow, like, you know, maybe a quarter of the book or something like that, to kind of get into the rhythm of it, I guess. But I really liked about it was it doesn't have faster than light travel.
Yeah. Well, it
does.
It does, but it limits it very specifically.
Right, right. Well, I guess what I mean is there's no faster than light information travel, even so you can't like instantly get a communication from, you know, across the galaxy.
Right.
So you basically it still had to come through the flow, and it still wasn't like on Star Trek where, you know, you get there and a day or a week or whatever it is. It's like, you know, it takes you like 9 months or whatever to come back.
Yeah. It's still not like, you know, in Star Wars where, you know, they have an entire galactic empire, but they always still wind up on the same three planets and they seem to only have to travel a day ever.
Yeah. Or less.
Right. Everything's a bus ride away. Yeah.
several hours, even if you're just going down the street.
Yeah, definitely. My take on it was, I liked it, but like you guys, it seemed like it was missing a little bit of something that, I mean, I just thought it was not necessarily a great match between Scalzi's style and an entire genre, because Galactic Empire stuff is big, serious stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's Dune, it's all that. And Scalzi's style keeps on reminding me that this is a little goofy. It's
Red Dwarf Empire.
And so it makes me nitpick a little bit harder. Like, thousands of years from now, will people still know the song, "Yes, Sir, That's My Baby"?
A new song with the same name.
I mean, I like the characters. It was really fun. And I got to the end, I'm just like, oh, okay, that was okay. But
yeah,
I
happened.
Just wasn't blown away by it. So really, I blame John Scalzi for raising my expectations up to an improper degree by writing better in the past.
How dare he?
And I think that there's an explanation for this that I will get into in the second part of the review.
Also, I did think that Will Wheaton did a good job.
Yeah, actually, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Several times I forgot that it was Will Wheaton. I forgot that it was Wesley reading to me. And that takes a bit of effort.
I never forgot.
I'm sure you didn't. I'm sure you, you know, had dreams about it and then so forth.
It's the whole, you know, putting him in the airlock and then, you know, spacing him and pulling him back in and reviving him and then spacing him again.
Spoilers. Well, since only the Impero can drink our essence, I think it's time for us to move along to our discussion section.
The Gelfling clan.
Yes, exactly. We shall return. Yes, if anybody can actually get this reference, then please write to us. Maybe you'll be our friend.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Probably not.
Probably not. We shall return, for we are sci-fi.
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 All right, so welcome back to our discussion of The Collapsing Empire by John Scalzi, where we shall spoil things until the flow collapses, if you know what I mean.
The Clapping Empire.
Wow.
See, I dug deep for that one.
Yeah,
and even beyond like usual dirty stuff that I come up with.
Yeah, he caught the clap. But anyway.
I just heard you say clapping the first time you said collapsing.
What's that sound? It's the sound of one hand clapping.
I got your one finger clapping here. Anyway, so let's discuss this book, please. Yeah, one thing that I discovered by listening to, or rather reading, the afterword of this book was that is the beginning
of... Did you read the afterword or did you listen to it?
I actually read the afterword.
Because I didn't get an afterword in my audiobook.
Well, you didn't deserve it.
Oh, what did I have to do to earn it?
Well, you had to get the Kindle version.
But that's not an unabridged edition then, is it?
Apparently not. You should really write in and complain.
I am. I'm going to get my credit back.
He will. Watch this. I think he actually will.
I'm going to aim for 2.
I read this entire book waiting to read the afterword where he described the writing process, that he wrote part of it in Hawaii, and that he got a massive multi-book contract.
You guys made me look stupid on my podcast because I didn't know there was an afterword.
Yes. So apparently this is the first time that John Scalzi has had a very big multi-year contract. And you can sort of see that he's pacing himself, I believe, on this book. He had a very specific plot point that he wanted to get to at the end. And
apparently he had 13 plot summaries for different books. And he thought they would pick four or five. And they're like, sounds good. Let's do all of them.
Yeah, take them all.
He's like, okay, sounds good. Let's sign it really quick.
And I mean, I can see the publishers doing it. They're just like, it's John Scalzi. It's going to be okay no matter what.
At worst, it's going to be okay.
Pretty much.
And at its best, it's going to be great.
Yeah, pretty much. And I still believe that. Yeah, in some ways, though, I thought there was a little bit more sort of sedate pacing in this, and it didn't quite have kind of this sort of madcap feel that I kind of get with some of his other books.
Yeah, a lot of his other books, you get like sort of this breakneck,
right,
you know, spin through the entire plot and to the end of the book, and then it's boom, the end occurs.
Right.
Well, I think they kind of had to at least introduce the Empire and the plot line, you know.
Sure.
Overall.
But part of the frustration for me was a sort of just watching sort of dramatic irony being swished around a little bit, because like, oh, okay, now this person knows this part of it and this person knows this part of it, but we know the entire story pretty early on.
Right.
Right.
Except for the fact that is actually obvious but wasn't really noticeable to me, which was the fact that one planet was the only planet where they actually lived on the surface.
Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that for a while either.
Like, yeah, End was the only planet that where they actually lived on the surface, where everywhere else they were in containers. And so I was just like, okay, so the evil plot that the enemies are doing is based on misinformation, so they're all just going to be... I didn't really get the dramatic crunch till the end when it was suddenly revealed, oh, yes, End is the only planet that can survive independently at all.
Yeah, I mean, was that something that was, you know, disclosed in the beginning of the book, and we just, you know, it just was one of those details that went over our heads?
Probably.
Yeah.
I think it was mentioned, but I didn't really get the...
I mean, if you actually look at the descriptions, it's kind of obvious that, you know, this one is actually on the surface of a planet and the other ones are in shelters, but I really didn't really focus in on that.
I did kind of find it funny that they, you know, they didn't use like a gravity well term, but there were definitely people that were like, who would want to live on the surface of a planet? That sounds weird.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. So it was probably obvious to anybody who put a moment's thought into it. I did not.
I didn't get it till it was kind of like, you know, pushed in my face about halfway through the book. And
right.
I was like, oh, well, that makes things a little bit more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Galactic Empire genre, there have been a few sort of Galactic Empires. Usually it's an evil empire. This is the comparatively good empire, even though it seems to be mostly described as a con job.
It's evil as a byproduct.
Yeah, exactly. But the we've read one other, you know, Galactic Empire type of book, which was Hidden Empire. I was interested if we thought that there were any points of comparison. Now, if you, before you go looking through our back catalog, that was when we were just a book club and before we achieved our present glorious heights as a podcast.
Where we read about tree fornicators?
Yes. Yes. Thank you for glossing that into a far more agreeable term.
Wink.
We're doing you a favor by not recording that episode.
Yeah.
We're doing ourselves a favor by not recording that episode.
We can reread it. It's like $400 or something.
Yeah. Yes. Well, the first Patreon goal, if we get enough Patreon donations, we'll start a Patreon account.
Good idea.
Yeah,
it's sort of a time loop thing.
Egg, yeah. Or the chicken.
Exactly.
Or some sort of broccoli florette.
Exactly. So, I mean, I thought that of the two books, you know, we really didn't like Hidden Empire very much. So the prose style makes up for a lot. This is just an easy read. And what, Kevin J. Anderson, I think, wrote the other one, and he uses a slightly more stilted kind of style,
yes.
Whereas Scalzi writes very colloquially.
Yeah.
And it matches well with Will's narration style.
Exactly. I think that they were a little bit maybe too far away from sort of a nice balance point because, you know, Scalzi's colloquial style doesn't quite match with the sort of empire actions going on and the fact of the Imperium and so forth.
It doesn't seem grand enough.
In some ways, though... I mean,
it gives a different feel to it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it doesn't give you that giant thing where sometimes you're in the mood to, you know, it's like Twilight Imperium, the book or whatever. And like,
like I said, I do like Scalzi's style, and he does sort of make his characters more or less not so terribly stuffy that it's completely untenable. Like, you know, Cardenia, the Emperor, is, you know, she's not somebody that was raised to be royalty. She was somebody that just wants all of this stuffiness to go away. So it's not so bad. But I guess one question is, you know, one of the problems with interstellar empire stories is that they tend to have a very vast scale. And in this one, the book really ends just as we're sort of getting started with the plot in some ways.
I think a lot of empire books, it's like, oh, the first book is, you know, several hundred years of history or something. And this one, it's, you know, month seven, here we go. We're done with the book.
Right.
Like, wait, this is too hyper local for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they do give you a history through the memory room thing.
Yeah.
Of, you know, kind of, well, why it started up and all that stuff of the, well, it was a big, like you said, a big con job. And
right.
We put it as a strength. It's really a weakness, but just roll with it.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, part of the problem is that most of the sort of Galactic Empire stuff I read when I was a fairly new science fiction fan. And so they have these sort of halos in my mind, even though I'm not even sure I would like them very much if I reread them, like Isaac Asimov's Foundation series.
Yeah, that was a huge disappointment when I read it maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, because I had like sort of, you know, it's one of the great series and amazing. Like, I read it and I'm like, oh God, this was really dry and kind of like bureaucratic and like,
that's Asimov.
Yes.
I don't know. I've given Dune probably like 4 or 5 readings in my life, and I still enjoy quite a bit.
I should reread Dune. I've only read it actually once.
Well,
great David Lynch movie came out.
I think we just really like the hero, Baron Harkonnen.
Right. Who encompasses his doom. Yes, I've listened to the Toto soundtrack from that movie about 5 million times. So there's certain little clips from it that are ingrained in my memory.
I can imagine Kevin driving down the road, listening to the album and imagining himself as Paul Atreides. Standing in front of the worm.
Well, it's funny, when I saw that like years and years later, I watched it first before I knew who any of the actors were. So it's like, oh, that has Patrick Stewart in it. That's like, I had no memory of that.
Gurney Halleck.
Yeah.
You know, thus being part of our overall belief that Patrick Stewart really loves Dune buggies.
Right. And when he said yes to be in Dune, and he shows up and he's like, where's my Dune buggy? And like, no, the movie's called Dune. He's like, oh, damn it.
Yes. And we're aware that there was a Robot Chicken sketch about a similar idea, but we came up with this idea first. Damn it.
He finally got his Dune buggy in that Star Trek movie.
Yes, indeed. No, we have a bizarrely complicated backstory about Patrick Stewart.
And Dune buggies.
Probably shouldn't go into it.
We should.
We'll do a special episode later about Dune buggies.
Yes.
When we read Dune.
But, of course, one of the other galactic empires is in Star Wars. Now, one of the differences here is that space travel still takes a really long time, as you were saying.
Just like Taipan.
Always trade with the opium.
So the real key was to accidentally borrow a negative amount.
Yes. That's the best way.
Sorry, then now we're doing Apple II bug-based game humor.
Game
hacks.
It's
deep.
Yes, it's a pretty deep cut. But yes, do we have anything else to say about empires or slow travel?
Well, I think that kind of sets it apart from a lot of other galactic empires, is that it does have kind of the slow travel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, not like minutes or days or whatever. So it's actually, you know, months and months. So
it would be interesting to have a galactic empire with like no FTL whatsoever. So it's just like, okay, well, yeah, we're part of this empire. Sure.
I think there are ones like that, but I can't now recall.
That's something to think about.
Just something I watched recently on TV was Event Horizon, where it actually takes them several months to get out to Neptune. It's still, you know, faster than the normal propulsion, but that was an element I had not picked up on before in the movie.
That's not exactly a really hard science fiction movie, is it?
I don't want to put it in the fantasy category, but it's not, you're right, it's not super, I mean, it's Hellraiser in deep space. I don't know.
Science fantasy.
There are demons, is my point.
Yeah.
There could be demons. Maybe they live on Neptune.
It's an intriguing scientific theory.
This is definitely worth more exploration.
But as pertinent as that is to the book, we should really move on.
Right, streaming at my house later today.
Yeah. So one of the parts of the science fiction empire is they always use old style feudal names and terms and so forth. And so we have, well, Emperox in the book, and Empero is how it's apparently actually pronounced. And I was thinking about this afterwards, just like the sheer number of things that would have to line up for these names to be reused. It's just like, oh yes, well, really, I'm not going to call myself the president or, you know, the Generalissimo or something like that. not to take on a military name or something like that. I'm going to borrow a title from history that barely exists anymore.
Well, it's the ultimate irony is that when people finally do go to space, they need to have some sort of projection of power based on their name. So right, they're going to pick some sort of old school, you know, thing that, you know, kind of like tickles the back of people's brains. And
why do they all call themselves Barry? It's a name that evokes fear
and incontinence.
I'm not sure you really want to think about that.
No, I did. I remember when we read that book a while back, and I have no idea which one it was, but the guy's like, I would rather have people basically crapping themselves in fear of me because it's an actual honest reaction.
Okay, great.
It allows me to run faster and that I have, like, you know, lightened the load, so to speak.
God. But yes, it does make it more interesting that there's no FTL because it does allow, as I said before, sort of the dramatic irony of these people know this part of the problem and these people, you can't see my clever hand gestures, these people over here on the right hand of the galaxy know this part and these people over here on the left hand of the galaxy know this other part of the problem.
That's okay. You can do some clever...
You know, gradually you can see all the information coming together to the central point where they can actually see, oh, yes, now I understand everything that's been happening, why all these, you know, schemes have been going on. You know, these people think that this has been going on. They also do a solid defense of the importance of peer research and scientific review.
Indeed. That was kind of funny, where it's like... They've basing their entire plan off of this thing. Like, ha, no one else knows it. We're going to be, you know, the rulers of the galaxy. And then it's like, or not.
Yes. Yeah. The original math was flawed.
Right. Oh, yeah. She was sloppy in step A there. And I would have been sloppy too. But my son was able to check my math and I was wrong.
It's like the number of times in college when I transcribed the math problem incorrectly to my paper and realized I didn't transcribe it properly and exactly. Solved the wrong problem.
Yes. Or yeah, how many times it's just like, oh, you wanted the program to do that?
Yeah. So I'd like to thank Dr. Long, my math teacher, for still giving me credit on a lot of my homework, even though I transcribed the problem incorrectly. He's like, you did technically solve a problem.
Yeah, exactly. In some ways, this might have been harder, but...
Turns out by doing that, it was impossible.
But yeah, the whole FTL thing reminds me of, apparently it's harder to write TV shows these days or movies because... You know, most romantic comedies would be solved almost immediately with somebody picking up the phone and calling the other person.
Like texting somebody. Like,
right.
Oh, did this actually happen?
Yeah.
Like, you know, yes.
Did you sleep with my brother?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, exactly.
So all that 70s or not all of the 70s era sitcoms would just not really exist.
Right. Yeah. So we had a big surprise at the end where there was an attempt to kill the Empress.
That was not a surprise
at
all.
That was not much of a surprise. At least didn't really surprise any of us, I don't think.
It was just like, oh, wow, what could possibly go wrong? I'm going to go into the, you know, my enemy's clan's ship. I'm sure it's safe because they have one of their... You know, offspring in there too.
Right. The one that has no narrative point anymore.
You know, because we're not going to get married. And so we're just going to have tea and say, see you later.
Yeah. We're just going to hang out and, you know, be honest with one another.
It'll be fine.
That actually happened.
It would have been more astonishing if they had actually just gone through with it.
Right.
You know, if it could have just, like, the entire plot ends there, and then the last chapter is John Scalzi apologizing to all of his editors, like, that he's already signed up for 15 sequels of this, and he's going to have to come up with some new ideas now.
The bloodlines did not converge.
Yeah.
Maybe they could all turn into spiders or something.
Mm.
Maybe meet the spider people.
That's a different book. Let's see. So, usual questions. Did we have favorite scenes?
I really like the memory room.
Yes.
I thought that was a really cool element of this book.
Yes.
Where basically the current emperor can gain access and talk to any of their prior ancestors and ask some questions, which is all this information has been gleaned through this implant in the back of the neck. Yeah. This implant that sort of reads their thoughts and gets, you know, becomes sort of like a mini AI minus all the sarcasm and
right. I will detract a couple of points there because you'd expect a more post-human kind of empire if you had that kind of technology, but maybe they just keep it under wraps for very specific reasons.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it'll develop further in later mm-hmm. books or something, but
sure.
It is sort of like a very neutered version of a AI clone of somebody, I guess.
Only sure. The Emperor gets to do that and wear purple or something.
Oh my God, only the Emperor gets to drink their essence.
Exactly.
That's a Dark Crystal reference to anybody who's still confused.
Why spoil it?
Yeah, my favorite scene, so we had Huma Lagos. The Lagos clan was actually a pretty enjoyable clan of people that just seemed to be, I don't know, assholes? I mean, what's the proper term?
Fun.
Exciting.
I did enjoy Kiva, yes.
Yeah, we had, like mother, like daughter, you know, Kiva was this relentlessly crass, endlessly profit-driven, I guess, and, you know, highly sexual person that basically would it's just like, she would only be roused from, you know, she would be roused from having sex with somebody in order to make profit on something.
So were the Lagos like the Ferengi or something like that?
Well, they were humans, yes. So not so much.
But, you know, in general, well, whatever.
But, you know, the other thing is she's one of the good guys, basically. She's...
Oh, right.
I mean, she's at least morally neutral. She's not trying to, you know, do anything that's particularly shady or underhanded. Well, she's doing a lot that's shady and underhanded, but in a relatively aboveboard way.
She's a proper capitalist.
Yes.
Right.
So there was a great scene where she goes in with her mother to go see Lord Ammit, and her mother utterly destroys him, just like, oh, and you know, you might think you're going to do this, and then we would do this, and you might think this. And it just ends, and the two of them walk out, and her daughter turns to her and says, I fucking love you. And it was this sort of weird moment of mother-daughter bonding over shared destruction of an enemy.
Yes.
And it's just like, it's great to see families that can play together.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's even like a scene just before that where they're basically berating the secretary or something and like threatening to destroy her life just for, you know.
Yeah. You better let me in or bad things will happen. You'll be blacklisted forever.
Yeah. Exactly. So yes, usual questions. Was there tea? Well, as we mentioned already, Ammit and Cardenia had a tea service together. The tea was not itself described, so we don't know if they were using all the terms properly. So, you know, minor bonus points for that.
I also give it minor bonus points for not going in depth on the tea. Mm-hmm. It could have just been, you know, like Lipton.
Yes. As usual, you gain some points with Barry and you lose some points with me.
It would be Lipto.
It's Lipton with an X.
Exactly.
Liptonol.
Liptox.
Liptox tea. Liptox. Like a great brand name.
I was going to say, they should have based everything on tea. And no, that's basically Dune. But
you want the tea? I mean, the spice?
Let's see. So then, which character do you want to be and or who would you be?
Well, we all know Barry's Kiva.
Except I don't swear as much.
Yeah, but, you know, it's
still Kiva.
It just seemed like it fits.
Maybe you're Huma.
That might also be possible.
Uh-huh. Yes, let's see. I don't know. I think I would be Ji-Yi, the interface, the memory room. He's got a good gig.
He just gets to sit there forever.
Did we figure out how that was spelled?
Yeah. Yes, I did it.
Oh, yeah, there it is. It's on the paper.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. We write up these entire papers.
I printed it, yet I didn't read it.
Mm, thank you.
There's so many words.
It was so confusing.
Kevin?
It's hard to pick, but, you know, I think it's hard to turn down the opportunity to be an emperor.
All right. Well, do we have anything else that we need to discuss?
Tell me another one. I did actually enjoy the kind of goofy ship names.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
The yes, sir. The no, sir.
It's a lot like the Player of Games universe where, I mean, there the ships were naming themselves and they were, you know, artificially intelligent and usually a bit snide. So they would come up with crazy names. These seem to be just, you know, humans coming up with Scalzi type of names.
Right.
So.
Or even in like in one of our previous books, you know, the servitors and.
Sure.
You know, where they basically come up like, oh, I'm sine x squared or.
Right. Yeah. Those were the mathematical equivalent of a Scalzi name. Yeah, there was, you know, yes, sir, that's my baby and it's sister ship. No, sir, don't mean maybe. And, you know, I give it points for kind of being cool and taking away points for, are people really going to remember that song? I barely remember it now.
I'm disappointed that they weren't artificially intelligent ships.
Well, we don't know for sure that they weren't. They just didn't mention it.
Well, I'll give Scalzi permission to put that in, even if it was my idea.
You hear that, Mr. Scalzi?
Yep, I know he's waiting for my permission.
Well, you know.
I'd be impressed if he made it this far into the podcast.
He's probably already used the psychic powers to destroy this recording as well.
Damn.
We should not taunt him. All right.
His next picture, next Twitter posting of a sunset will actually be a nuclear blast of my house.
Lols. Okay, well, I don't seem to have a funny catchphrase to end this one on.
But we did have several other funny catchphrases, but we're going to elect not to use them.
We're going to elect not to use them. Maybe some future Patreon goal will be to allow you to know what the things that we are exercising restraint in not using.
It'll be one of those limited number of Patreons can subscribe to that and get the cutting room floor.
Exactly. So if you would like to contact us, we are reachable on Twitter at SF3Podcast, via email, sf3podcast@gmail.com, and via Apple Podcasts, sci-fi, 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 all one word, or search for SF3, SF numeral 3. And until next time, we have been sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi.